Hey, this is Joshua Caleb Green from PermanentRecordDrums.com. Welcome to the Renaissance.
Welcome to the Renaissance Life, a podcast dedicated to excellence, mastery, in a life of meaning and worth. I am your podcaster in crime, Josh Wagner, at renaissance.life on Instagram. How you feeling today? I'm feeling good. It is very late. I'm very tired. It is 11:14 p.m., way past my bedtime, but I really wanted to get this out so it would go out in the morning. This is a conversation that I had with Joshua C. Green of Permanent Drum Records and the drummer of Summer Dregs and Info Dig. Josh is a fantastic person to talk to. I really enjoyed meeting him, catching up with him, and having this conversation with him. We talk about a ton of things. We talk about challenges. We talk about daily challenges. And we talk about music, we talk about health and wellness, we talk about religion, we talk about, you name it, we talk about it all. And there was even a train that ran through our conversation. We talked so long. That's how good it was. But seriously, I really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys do too. If you want to support the Renaissance, go to patreon.com/lifemastery. There you will find some tiers that you can sign up for as little as $5, $10, $15 or more. You can become a patron and not only support the Renaissance and what I do, but also you get exclusive access to the Life Mastery Podcast, a podcast also dedicated to mastery, but involving you. That's right. You can be on the podcast if you sign up for the right tier. And not only that, you can be involved in the community of the Patreon. So that is the Life Mastery, not the Life Mastery, it's Life Mastery, the Facebook. So go to patreon.com/lifemastery. But wait, there's more. If you go there right now, the first 20 people that sign up get 1 hour. No, let's make it 2 hours. They get 2 hours of life mastery coaching from me. That can be on the podcast. That can be off the podcast. Whichever one you prefer. But 2 hours of free life mastery coaching. We could talk about whatever you want, whatever you're going through, whether it's business, life, career. And I'm going to be there to help you master what you want to do. So go to patreon.com/lifemastery. All right, I hope you enjoy this episode with Josh Green, and I'll see you on the other side. What was the last movie you saw?
Captain Fantastic.
Captain Fantastic. Yeah. I've heard great things about it. I haven't seen it yet though.
I love Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
And it made me anxious as I
anxious?
Watched it. Yeah, because he does such ridiculous things.
Okay.
I mean, things that were awesome.
Yeah.
But it, like, as a dad, I've got 4 kids and I was like, oh, stop. Don't do that. But at the end, I was glad he did all of those things.
I feel the same way about shows like The Office or Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
You know, like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, those are kind of the best things to watch when you actually have a reaction and you're like,
it's hard for me to watch it. It's like, cringe.
Yeah.
Do you prefer? I'm forgetting. Do you prefer Josh or Joshua?
Josh is fine.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right.
You're a Josh, too.
I am a Josh. Yeah. Yes. Josh Club.
One Josh to another.
Do you make Josh jokes?
Like only just in the joshing right context.
Yeah.
It's my Josh. Be a special time.
Okay. So, Josh.
Yes.
When you are at a place where people don't know you and you get that infamous question, what do you do? How do you answer that?
I sit them down and I'm like, this is going to be a long talk. I do everything. No, I'm kind of like a child. I have like so much curiosity and a lot of interest.
That's great.
In everything.
Yeah.
So
I'm the same way.
I love jujitsu. I love really? Archery. I am a drummer. I'm an art teacher. I do all kinds of different things. And so I'll be like, do you really want to know like what I do to like pay my bills? And then if they want to go deeper, I'll tell them like the many, many other things that I'm into. But by day, I'm an art teacher in an elementary school.
Oh, okay, great.
So
great.
That's the short answer.
The short answer. Okay. I'm awful at that question. I don't know where to start or to begin. I'm kind of the same boat. You just go like I'm all over the place kind of style.
Yeah.
Similar to what I did earlier.
It kind of depends on who's asking the question. Okay. If I can tell a person really doesn't care, I'll be like, oh, I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And if I can tell a person's legitimately curious, I'll be like, all right, let's get into this. I'm going to tell you all of the ridiculous things that I am enamored with in life.
That's great. Why and when did you start getting into becoming an art teacher?
I actually started teaching in the early 2000s because I was, and this is the worst motivation for becoming a teacher. My bass player in a band that I was in called Infradig, it was like, hey man, if we get teaching jobs, we can tour in the summers. And that's
how
I started.
Best reason.
Yeah, that's how I started my teaching career is like,
man, we get summers off.
Yeah, like we'll do like regional gigs, get up in the morning, teach school, and then in the summers we'll tour. And that's how I started teaching. I also started teaching at the worst school in Hamilton County, which was Franklin Middle School. It was a really tough place.
Why is it the worst school?
Well, it's not there anymore.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a real bad place. Like kids just assaulting you,
oh,
cursing
man.
You out on a daily basis. And yeah, so I'm in a very safe place now. I'm in a private Christian school environment where kids are excited to learn.
Where are you at?
Chattanooga Christian School.
Okay. I've heard of it. I've never been there or experienced it.
Yeah. It's just a huge private school.
Okay.
Super fun environment. I can be like, hey, kids, we're going to draw a rhinoceros. And they'll be like, what?
That's
great.
Freak
out. Unlike the smug middle schoolers. Like, wherever you are, middle schoolers are just like, this stinks, man.
Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Rhinoceros? Yeah. Seriously? What grade do you teach?
I teach pre-K through 5th.
Okay. So what was the process like to become that? Like, so your buddy says, hey, we should become teachers, right? So how did you get into like art position?
Yeah,
like,
it was,
were you an artist before that?
Yes. I've been super involved with just art and music my whole life. But I taught English when I started. I had an English major from Covenant College, and that was like a natural transition to teaching.
Yeah.
And then just by happenstance, at a middle school, Chattanooga Valley Middle School in Flintstone, Georgia, the principal was like, I'm going to start an art program. And I just like slipped into it.
Nice.
I took a test and I got certified and it was super easy from there.
Oh, that's great. So yeah. do you follow like your own style of programming, like program for the class? And
yes.
Yeah.
The great thing about teaching art is nobody knows what to do with you. I mean,
so you can just do whatever, right?
Yeah, you can. And
to a degree.
Luckily, I have integrity, so I'm not just down there screwing around. But nobody comes down and over-programs you.
Okay. Yeah, no micromanaging.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, none of that. And so I'm able to kind of breathe with the programming that I do there.
I would say that teaching, this isn't always the case, especially if you have tenure and stuff like that,
yeah,
you know, college, but you have to kind of love the process of like the transfer of knowledge.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what about teaching do you really enjoy?
I like watching my students grow, especially from year to year. I start every class off with self-portraits every year. And so if they're smart and they hold on to them, they can put one beside the other, and then they just watch
see the tangible. The progress of
that, like, that's the thing about education is there's a lot of intangibles. Like,
yeah,
there's never like, oh, I built this, let me look at it.
Right.
And that's frustrating as an educator. But at least this one little thing, I can have a tangible growth element where yeah. I'm looking at, look at last year's, look at this year's, look at the next
year. Yeah, you can see the progression, yeah. your improvement.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about related field like design mm-hmm. and programming. Like what you do, like you see the effects like immediately.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're doing it right or wrong, or whether you're making progress, it's like mm-hmm. instant feedback.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I long for that because there's very little of that in education.
I think it works the same way with music too.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on like the education system as a whole?
That's not really my thing.
Okay.
I just go and do my art class and I don't really like get into the whole scope of the educational system.
Yeah, the high minded like
yeah. It's not really my thing.
So if somebody wanted to learn art, no matter what age they are, maybe they're 15, maybe they're like 46 or something.
Right.
Where would you direct them to start? Like any recommendations?
Well, there is an interesting book called I forgot the name of the book. Drawing from the Right Side of the Brain.
Yes, I've read it.
Yeah,
it's a great book. Yeah,
yeah. Actually, when I first started teaching art, that's how I started teaching, and it was an utter disaster
because
I was teaching middle school, and I was having these kids like draw upside down pictures of like politicians, and they were like, "This is the worst," and so I quickly abandoned that. But if you're a mature person seeking growth, particularly with drawing skills, yep. that's a good place to start because you will engage a part of your brain that is probably atrophied and you will develop pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if you are forced to do that, not gonna
it's
happen.
A different story.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I went into teaching art in a middle school with like all these high hopes after reading that book, and man, it just got thrown in my face. They were not having it. They were angry.
I think I took art in middle school and high school, and yeah, I just drew like cartoons and
yeah.
things like that, you know.
Now, did you go to school around here?
I did, yeah.
Where'd
Silverdale.
Silverdale.
Also private. Private
Baptist.
School. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Baptist. Actually, the former singer of my band, Summer Dregs, Paul Smallman, I think he is the choir director there now.
What? Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. I don't know Paul, but that's cool.
Yeah. We call him Young Paul because Carl and I have been. Carl is the other member of my band, Summer Dregs, and we've been playing together for like 15, 16 years now.
Yeah.
And, we took on Paul when we built this light show for Summer Dregs, and now that is kind of pushed to the side, and it's just Carl and me at this point.
Okay. But
Paul is a choir director. There you go.
Small world.
Yes, it is.
I want to definitely get into Summer Dregs and lights
sure.
shows.
Yeah.
But let's start off with you. Like, tell me about your parents. What were they like growing up? And today
they were, and they still are, polar opposites.
Okay.
My dad is like,
don't tell mine, but mine are too.
Yeah. It was great. Like, I love my parents to death. I couldn't ask for better parents, but they are definitely polar opposites. As I was growing up, my dad would just escape to the woods.
Okay.
He would take his canoe and he would go off for like several days at a time by himself. My mom is like super, super spiritual.
Okay.
And she would go to like spiritual development conferences. And
oh,
so
nice.
They were just running in opposite directions. And that's the way they function. Pretty much my whole life. They just went in different directions.
Do you know how they met? I'm just curious.
They met at what is now a U-Haul on Broad Street, which used to be a
They met at a U-Haul.
They met at a U-Haul. It used to be a car dealership, and okay. my dad was painting there, and he nice. Came in to wash out his brushes, and one thing led to another, and here I am.
That's good. Any lessons that you've learned from him over the years? I'm sure, like, any great lessons that stand out to you? Because from that juxtaposition between spiritual and nature, like, I'm sure you experienced a lot of different mindsets.
Yeah,
you know, growing up.
Yeah, I can't think of like a specific lesson, but
do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I've got one sister.
Okay,
we actually live in an insane family compound in the heart of Chickamauga, Georgia.
You told me this when we met. Tell me again. Like, this is
okay. Yeah. I'm gonna get deep with you for real quick. So my grandmother was Betsy. Okay,
Betsy.
She married Frank Green, who was my grandfather.
Okay,
they moved to Chickamauga and lived in the Gordon Lee Mansion.
Okay. It has mansion in the title, so imagine it's huge.
A huge antebellum mansion.
Okay,
it
awesome.
It was used as a hospital in the Civil
War. Oh, wow, nice.
And she got tired of his chicanery and divorced that Frank and married Frank Pierce, okay. who was the mayor of Chickamauga, and moved 600 feet away to another mansion, the Jewel House, which
That's
is
a good
in
name.
The middle. It looks almost exactly like the Gordon Lee Mansion. So she went from one Frank in a mansion to the other Frank. And that is the mansion that I live in now. So I live on the bottom floor, and my sister's family lives on the top, and my parents live in another building on the property.
That is so great. Obviously you guys each have your own space, so I imagine you're not killing each other, right?
We're killing each other.
Okay.
But slowly.
But it's a good dynamic.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Our kids love having their cousins around and being able to walk over to their grandparents.
I imagine the holidays are insane.
Everything's insane. Like, the whole thing is really wacky, but it's a pretty interesting experiment.
I'm imagining like Cheaper by the Dozen or those kind of movies.
Yeah, maybe. It's just constant.
It sounds
social.
Like it sounds fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
It is. It gets overwhelming at times, but it's fun.
Is your sister younger sister or older sister?
She's younger, and I am a private Christian school art teacher and in an elementary. And until this year, she was a private elementary Christian school teacher as well. And my name is Joshua Caleb Green, and she married a guy named Joshua Caleb Kring. Yeah, it's like
your life is crazy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man. It's really.
It was. Are those requirements like okay? I can only marry a Frank.
Yes. No, Frank is off limits. There's no more marrying of Franks in the Green family.
What is your relationship with them now? Like, as opposed to when you were younger?
With who?
With your parents?
Oh, well, they're
is
all
it
up in our business
dynamic
all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. they're there all the time. We're close.
Mm-hmm.
I've always enjoyed and been comfortable around my parents. This is like a safe relationship, you know. Mm-hmm. So every time I'm around them, I just enjoy it.
Any lessons from being an older brother?
Ooh, I remember that
question.
I was a real ass for a lot of my life. You know, when you have a close sibling, a lot of times you just there's like tension and stuff. And
in I have two younger sisters. Explain that a little bit.
I look back and I think about, you know, when we were like angsty teens and tweens and you know, we're at each other and stuff. But we were lucky, my sister and I, because we saw eye to eye on a lot of stuff, and we became friends, you know, in the upper teenage years.
That's great.
And beyond. We've just been pretty tight.
I think those are the best kind of brother sister brother like dynamics, you know.
Yeah.
You're not just related in a fashion, you're like, hey, I like you, let's hang out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I remember when it happened, like, we were like, whoa, we can be friends. And we were like in college, and we were like, oh wow, okay,
are we best friends now?
Yeah, BFFs, sis.
Let's jump into music. When did music come into your life? When is it? Has it always been there? Like, what did your parents listen to when you were younger?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. One of the most formative things was Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond.
Yes.
Classic.
My parents would blast Neil Diamond records, and my sister and I would like run at full speed around this beautiful ornate Japanese coffee table, and that would be our Friday night. It was just Neil Diamond and running around this party. Coffee table. And my dad introduced me to like Led Zeppelin and mm-hmm. The Who and all the stuff that he was into in the 60s.
Yeah, my dad was listening to like Creedence.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And I like legitimately was interested in music my whole life, but I never really jumped in full throttle until I was 12.
12, okay.
And it was the...
That's still young, I think.
It's pretty young. And I've got a 13-year-old now, so I'm like waiting for him to kickstart. I'm like, come on, man. It's time.
Why haven't you started your business yet?
Yeah, seriously, come
what
on.
What are you doing?
So the week before 7th grade, I realized that my dad had a drum set down the street in storage at my grandma's house. And I was like, Mom, can we go get that drum set? And she,
yeah.
Much to her chagrin, we went and got it and set it up. And I was living in a trailer out in the middle of a field in Chickamauga, Georgia. And I had a room addition off the trailer. We set up the drum set, and I didn't know what I was doing at all. But I started blasting
I think that's natural.
Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA and just had this primal instinct to just dum, dum, ka, dum, 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 ka, dum. And it,
that's
from there I was infected. I was just totally enamored.
Caught the bug.
I got it. And my dad was a drummer, and he really never he may have taught me like two or three things, but from like he didn't need to, because I was so into it that I just went at it with everything that I had.
Okay.
And like, I remember one time I was so obnoxious with wanting to play all the time. My mom was trying to take a nap, and she was laying on the couch in the trailer. And I came to her. I thought I was being sympathetic. I took these, like, you know, those headphones that you have when you're shooting a gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I put those over her head so she could take a nap so I could keep playing. I was just like a real jerk.
Yeah. If you're not aware, drums aren't like how they are on songs. Like, they are loud.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Even in concert situations, like if you're like playing drums, mm-hmm. they are loud and I mean, powerful.
Especially when you're learning and you don't have any dynamic range. You don't know what you're doing. You just hit stuff.
Yeah, as hard as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels good.
So you started by listening to songs and then going after that and trying to read.
Yes.
Okay.
I was obsessed with U2.
U2.
So I played a U2 records all day long.
Just on repeat.
Then one night I was driving home from something with my mom and I heard a Rush song. And I was like,
"Do you remember which song it was?"
No, I don't. But it was one of the songs where they're like the bass guitar and drums are all just in tight unison.
Yeah.
And I was like, "What is this? I must know." And then I went down that rabbit hole and I became like a mini Neil Peart. Like he was my hero, and I had no musical identity other than trying to emulate Neil Peart. And then moving forward, I kind of took all these elements from stuff I was listening to, and I was also into marching band and jazz band in college.
Nice.
And so I started listening to jazz and started taking jazz lessons at UTC, and that opened up like a new world to me.
Mm-hmm. I love the jazz style drums.
Me too. Yeah. And then I realized that you could take jazz and apply it to like any art form, and that occurred to me in 1996 in New Orleans. I saw Medeski Martin and Wood open for Phish.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not a big Phish fan, but yeah, I just went because I had a ticket and we were down in New Orleans, but I was like, what is this? And I saw Medeski Martin and Wood, and it was like the embodiment of everything I'd ever wanted to do musically. Everything they did was like blowing my mind.
That's fantastic.
And yeah, so I don't know. There's like a whole litany of influences.
I want to get into influences, but I see, like, before I forget, it's related to art where when you're first starting out on a skill, you kind of think you're bad, mm-hmm. or maybe you don't realize you're bad, but when you go back and think about what you were doing at the time, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I can't believe that was that. I did that, especially with art, you know, like if I look at art from way back in the day of like high school or something, middle school, it's just like, what was I thinking?
Oh yeah. You know? I mean, I can look at most things that I did 2 weeks ago and be, and at the time I was real jazzed about it. And then I'm like, oh, I hope nobody sees that. I'm very self-critical about anything that I create.
I think that's a good thing. Would you agree?
It is good. It is good. In the beginning, though, I think that's absent for most people. Just you make something, and you're so happy that you made something. You want everybody to see it or experience it. It's dangerous.
But I just think that having that keeps you going. I mean, there's a fine line, right, from like abusing yourself with being bad or like not doing as well as you want to. But at the same time, it kind of pushes you forward. In a way,
yeah,
like it makes you a better drummer, makes you a better artist.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah,
like I'm kind of at this point in my life, I'm self-critical to a fault. I feel like I just can't appreciate the stuff that I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Just
I don't know.
Just over time, just being so used to it.
Yeah, I think that, and also, and I'm in the midst of this 365 day drumming.
Yes,
thing,
permanent. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I look at stuff that I did like a few months ago and I'm like, ooh.
I just see like the progress from that, you know.
Yeah.
If literally like 3 months ago you feel like you were doing worse than you are now, that's incredible.
Yeah, well that's definitely what's happening.
I mean that's a great reason to start something like that.
Sure. Yeah, and that's why I did it. Just to develop and grow. As an artist,
let's actually go into it. Okay. So, where did the idea come from?
Okay. So,
well, actually, explain what it is first.
Okay. So, Permanent Record is a 365 day drumming project where I each day record, edit, and publish drum samples. And so, within any daily installment, there are anywhere from like 5 to 15 grooves. 10 to 40 drum fills and then raw stems for people to use in recordings. And today will be number 276.
Oh, wow.
Of 365. So I have less than 100 to go, which is nice. and I'm still married. just barely. But I actually started thinking about this like 7 years ago. And it was also because of the drummer Billy Martin from Modesky Martin Wood. He put out like just these little records, little CDs of just some beats, and some of them had more melodic elements to them, like some stuff overlapping them. They weren't all just strict drum beats.
Yeah.
But I was like, I would like to archive myself, but I could never think of the proper vehicle to do that.
So.
I was like, maybe I'll put it out on vinyl so DJs can use it. But then I was like, barely any DJs use vinyl anymore, sadly. And so I couldn't think of the proper way to do it. And like, my birthday was coming up last October. I was like, my birthday is in November. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it every day for 1 year. And that's going to be the way that I execute this thing that I've been thinking about.
That's fantastic. I've watched a lot of them. They're funny, I think.
They're hilarious. Some funny stuff. Yeah. I exploit my kids.
They're great, but they're funny.
I think that most people probably appreciate the ridiculous videos more than the actual drum samples.
So tell me about the first few days, maybe the first week of this process. Because coming up with something, first of all, up with something, playing, recording, videoing and publishing, that's no joke.
It's a real pain. I was so excited when I first started That was, you know, mid-November. My birthday is November 24th, and that was the first installment. And I just remember being real excited when I started and thinking, I have ideas for days. You know, I have like a lifetime of recordings and stuff to reference, things that I want to archive from my musical identity. And they also took like...
See the hopo?
I did see that guy. That guy is
got three trash bags.
What's in them?
Candy, I hope.
I hope it's full of Tootsie Rolls. yeah, they took like... When I first started, it took like 3 to 4 hours to record, edit.
I think even that's impressive. I mean, publish. That's impressive.
And now I've got it to where I can do it in an hour.
Nice.
Which I'm pretty happy about, because like yesterday I came home from teaching. I went straight into my studio and just, I had a clear idea of what I wanted to do. I executed it quickly.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I had it in under an hour.
Do you, I love doing like table beats. Do you do like, oh, I had this idea, it's running through your head, and you like record it real quick and then you go and then actually lay it down?
Yeah. And so like, I was trying to like archive my favorite beats that I've ever done, like with all the bands that I've been in over my life. I tried, that's where I started. And after a while I was like, oh, I'm out of those. And so I just have to like listen to stuff that I'm influenced by and put my own take on it. So yesterday I was listening to Kruder and Dorfmeister, which I have
Kruder
not.
Kruder and Dorfmeister,
it's good.
I'm gonna have to look
I haven't
them
listened to them in year, like since like the mid 2000s.
Okay,
and I was just playing some stuff yesterday, and I was like, oh man, that's a good groove. And then I put my own slant on their groove. So sometimes if I'm, you know, in a dry place, and I don't have like a plethora of things to draw from, I'll just listen to something to get some inspiration and go from there.
Okay, cool. So where, actually, let's backtrack a bit. What was the first time you went on stage? Like, what was that process like?
The first time I went on stage was in seventh grade when I barely knew how to play drums. And I did a drum solo at Chickamauga Elementary School.
Oh, yeah.
To U2's When Love Comes to Town.
Yes.
Featuring B.B. King. And, oh, man. I think we have a VHS of it somewhere.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope not.
I need to see that.
No, you don't. No one will. And somehow I think I won the talent show from doing this stupid thing. That just tells you the level of talent in historic and scenic Chickamauga.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah, well, we had a metal-ish band in high school, and yeah, we won the talent show too, which was the same kind of low bar, I think.
I don't know.
We got money though, so that was good.
I'll tell you what, I won so many talent shows
with
drum solos in high school.
It's impressive.
I mean,
you know?
I guess there was just nothing else. Nobody cared about anything else.
The hula hooper or the, you know, the person singing Evanescence or... Nothing like that.
Oh man, there was a guy in Ninja Tabbies, and like he had a rose in his teeth at Ridgeland, and he like had a wireless guitar system, and he was like going up into the crowd and just finger tapping these guitar solos. That guy did not want it. All you need is a drum solo. And my dad actually did a drum duet when I was in high school.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was the only kid in Chickamauga, Georgia to have timbales.
Timbales.
I don't know why I had the inkling to buy timbales living in a trailer in a field in Chickamauga, but I did. And we did a drum duet. My dad, there's probably a VHS of that too.
That's good. So where did the first band come into play? Like, was it you starting it, or was it an introduction to people where you're like, hey, we should start something?
My first real band was probably like 10th grade.
Okay.
And I had played soccer with my friend Blake Freeman Smith when we were in like third grade, but we went our separate ways. Mm-hmm. And this other drummer that I was friends with, Brian Irwin, was like, hey, you should get in touch with Blake. He's into Rush. And so my friend Blake and I started this band called Rain Tree.
Rain Tree. I like it.
Yeah. And it was either Bob Dylan covers, original crappy songs, or Rush covers.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my first real band. And Blake had, like, this deep voice. And so he's, like, trying to sing Rush songs in the range of Geddy Lee. It was a disaster. But it was really fun. Yeah, I think, like, one of the best things that you can do as a human is be in a band when you're young. Because even if you are super crappy, you are going to have to make creative decisions and argue and work stuff out with your friends.
I don't know if you think about it at the time necessarily, but it's really uncomfortable, you know? Like, did you ever have, like, stage fright or anything like that? It seems like you were, like, all on board, like, I'm just doing this. This is my thing.
Yeah, I mean, there have been certain points when I felt, like, more anxious than others, but, yeah, I like performing. Mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed it.
Have you ever tried getting past the drums, experimenting with other instruments and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can play several other instruments mediocre. Yeah, like I'm not great at anything else. Mm-hmm. But my wife is a good singer. We've recorded some stuff together and over the years, and yeah, I've sung at weddings playing guitars and stuff, and I'm like, not doing that again. It's not for me. I know my limitations.
So, obviously, this is something you are passionate about and something that you're going to probably do forever, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's just, it's a part.
Not every day.
Yeah, but a part of who you are.
Yes, it is.
When did you decide to pursue this as in a more serious fashion? Like, a serious and, like, I could do this for a living, probably.
Yeah.
If I push myself.
I guess it would be like as I was exiting college in the early 2000s, I was super, super passionate about this band that I had built called Infradig. And Infradig was an instrumental electronic reverse engineering entity where we would try and replicate electronic music in a human fashion.
Interesting.
It was the worst idea of a band to try and, like, really push because you're just clawing uphill.
Yeah, and it's very experimental.
But it was, it's like an avant-garde electronic band. You're not going to make it, you know? So, but we were, like, so into it, mm-hmm. and we toured, and I bled out of my eyes for that band for 9 years. And that was... also, when I was first married, we had, like, little kids.
And that's tough.
Yeah. I remember, like, going out, like, on regional tour days, and I'd see my kids at the window, like, tapping on the glass. And I'd be like, I am a monster. And so, yeah, it was rough. But that was the first kind of realization of, like, I am pursuing this with every ounce of my being. I remember when that band ended, I was like, I can do other things too. And I got, you know, like I said earlier, I've got a lot of other interests, and I kind of pursued those for a while, then got swept back into some other bands. One of them was The Distribution, which was like a soul and funk band, which was probably the most fun band I've ever been in because there's a bunch of crazy people and they were also really good. And then that led to Summer Dregs, mm-hmm. Which is kind of where we're at now.
What are some of the more harder moments of that? Like, okay, so your band had ended. At that point, you were like, okay, what do I do now, right?
Yeah, I actually remember a very poignant moment from that. Like I said, I poured everything into that band. And I remember... Dave Kaufman, my bass player, lived like sort of just kind of across the street from my house in St. Omo. And we were like unloading our stuff for the last time. And Dave says to me, well, we rocked in our 20s. What are we going to do in our 30s? And I was like, oh. I started crying because I really hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like my life's pursuit was sort of kind of coming to a conclusion, at least in my mind.
That's how it felt. Yeah.
Yeah.
And something else that you said, I don't necessarily agree with you should only do one thing mentality.
Right.
I mean, I understand getting very good at one thing, mm-hmm. but that type of specialization, I think, is only good for certain industries.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
Because at least the way I do it, I like to connect different things, right? So music, and for your case, music and art is a great connection. And there's sure. so many things that are related to that and so many ideas that can spark from that.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of agree with the same
sentiment? Oh, I do. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Totally. And I guess what I'm doing right now is kind of the opposite of that for the most part, because it's just like every day I'm focused on creating really good drumming. But aside from that, there's all kinds of things that I want to pursue.
But that's, you know, that's related to Summer Dregs too, because that makes you a better sure. drummer and recorder and mm-hmm. Performer, I would say. And also, like, you're also doing teaching and you're yeah. married and have kids, so.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, this is the wrong time of life for me to be doing this, actually. Which kind of makes it more interesting, I think. Like, I ran into a friend that I used to race mountain bikes with. I used to be really into cycling and
oh, nice.
did a lot of racing and stuff. And I ran into this guy that I raced with, and he was like, "Have you been riding?" And I was like, "No." And he was like, "What's going on?" And I told him what I was doing, and he says, "Why?" And he's like, that's in the right. same boat as me. He's yeah. like, he's actually a teacher. He's got a wife and kids and stuff. And I'm like, because I care about it.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the same thing to him, like,
yeah.
He's talking about cycling. You're like, why? Why are you cycling? You know?
It's different though. It's different.
You think,
like,
so?
Yeah, I do. Like, cycling, like, you can make that into something that's like, you know, you can set goals for yourself and everything. I've done that. I've gotten really good at it before. When you're trying to perfect yourself as an artist, I feel like it's a different playing field.
I see. Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah.
But it was just funny that he had like the most cynical reaction. I was like, really? Oh, I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to do something that's substantial, you know, trying to make the most of my time on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, I'm biased, but I think that's great. So let's talk about Summer Dregs. How did that start? When did you meet Carl? And
okay, so it's actually a funny story. Carl, I was actually doing youth group at New City Fellowship, a church in Chattanooga, and Carl was in the youth group. And this is when I was first married, so I knew Carl as like a teenager, and he was a deep thinker, and I really appreciated him. In addition to that, he was like a musical phenom. He was just like so good at that point, just playing piano and having a good ear. And he would come and sit in with my band Infradig, and he wanted to join the band. And I was like, this kid's like 17, forget this. And after a while, he just like, he worked himself in.
Just kept coming.
Yeah,
he kept coming,
and we realized like he was like a major benefit. Once he was in, he started like writing stuff and changing things and sort of directing things, and it was like obviously he had a spiritual gift for the creation of music and producing, particularly. And that was like the early 2000s, and you know, when you're on the road with somebody, you just like have all these experiences and you get to know people in a very intimate way. And we became friends. And I think at this point we've become like better friends than we ever were.
That's great.
Just 'cause we understand each other and we mm-hmm. know what to expect of each other. And I think we both appreciate each other a lot more now. Just, you know, all those experiences and time and everything. Summer Drag started because Carl got a Make Work grant from Create Here.
Create Here, I'm not aware.
Create Here was a Main Street entity, and they would give out grants for certain artistic endeavors and cultural endeavors. And he got a grant to do this collaboration recording. And so that was his first venture into like real production.
Nice.
And he started recording, and he just had like a super awesome penchant for recording and production and bringing people together.
Okay.
In a very profound way. And that's where I started recording. I did like the majority of the drums on that record. And then Summer Dregs became like a band, and then it became another recording thing, and then a band, and then then we built a light show.
I've actually seen I was at TopCon this past time, so I saw him speak, and I saw the light show of one of your newer songs, I think, and then also the sewing machine thing.
Yes.
Which was, I mean, his speech was fantastic, and the light and everything he showed was fantastic.
Yeah. 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 He's awesome.
He seems like a cool guy.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah. So, where did the name come from, by the way? Summer Dregs. I love that name.
I don't remember how that started. Yeah. I don't remember.
Okay. Okay.
It had another name, something about a rabbit. Yeah. It didn't take off.
Summer Rabbits?
Yeah. Spring Rabbits. No, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Tell me, do you have any like highlights from touring so far, like experiences on the road?
The best touring story that will probably never be topped is Carl and I and Dave, our bass player, we were in Infradig, and we had just played this festival in Illinois called Cornerstone. And Cornerstone was like 25,000 hardcore weirdo Christians that were like screamo bands. So we were like the big anomaly. It was it's so strange. It's like a farm out in the middle of nowhere, and it's like Jesus. And we played that, and then the next night we played this bar out in a cornfield in Iowa, and people were yelling at us to shut up. They were like literally yelling, "Shut up!" And we were like really sad, and
well, they were probably all shammered, so.
Yeah, it was just strange because we had been like lauded at this festival full of screamo weirdos and then told to shut up. Then
very
the next night,
experience.
The next night, we were in this podunk town playing a bar, and there were like 20 people there. It was good. We played a good show, 20 people. Yeah. And when we're packing our stuff up, this guy wanders up. He's like, "Hey, I need you to come to this farm." And we're like, "What?" He's like, by this time it was like midnight.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's like, come to my farm. And we're like, okay. So we packed up all our stuff. We drive to this farm. There's like 500 people passed out in a cornfield, right? And he leads us into this barn, and there's a full sound system and light rig and everything. And we set up all our stuff, and I'm like, "What are we doing here?" By this time, it's like 3 a.m., right? This guy goes around and wakes up everybody, 500 people out of their tents, gets them into the barn, and we just go. And everybody loses their mind. They were losing their minds, jumping all over the place, all over the stage, freaking out, and we played till the sun came up. And it was probably the best night that we ever had as a
That's
band.
The best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was
it's
great.
It's so random.
I remember like looking through the planks of wood on the barn and watching the sunrise and being like, "That can't be the sun." And it was the sun.
Why? Why were there 500 people in a field?
I have no idea. I think they are just probably all out there on MDMA and just like really having a great time. They crashed, and then they had their second wind by way of us. It was great, so man. I don't think that we ever had another show that rivaled that one. Just because I guess when you wake people up and get them out there, that's the key. I don't know.
What advice would you give to someone pursuing creative work?
I think at this point in my life, I would say do something like I'm doing. That when you do something in repetition, you grow as an artist.
Yeah.
Like what I'm doing right now, recording, editing, publishing every day, it has changed me in just a few months. So
wow.
The discipline of doing something every day is pretty remarkable.
I'd love to do something like that with writing or with this.
Yeah.
Podcasting is interesting because you get to, A, like, ask people that you wouldn't normally get to ask, like, great questions, get really deep into things, but also, like, meet really interesting people.
Sure.
So I think I'd love to do that every day, too.
You know? I actually, you know, I have several musician artist friends that have done similar things to what I'm doing, but not quite what I've done. Charles Allison, I don't know if you know him.
I don't know.
He is a really good musician, and he did like a song a week for a year.
Oh, nice.
And then I have the bass player of my band, the Distribution, Travis Knight, is a illustrator around town, and he did a drawing of these creepy creeps a year. He did that for like every day for a year.
I'd love to chat with Travis. Yeah, I've met, awesome. I've watched his one of his speeches about on his creeps.
Yeah,
they're so good.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And so I was just kind of like, hey, I'll do this thing every day for a year. But I think the thing that I'm doing is more laborious.
I think so too. I mean, you're doing a lot with it. You
ridiculously,
know?
The workload is pretty crazy.
So you're saying, you would recommend challenging yourself to do something every day?
Yeah, because if you do something every day, there's no way you're not going to get better at what you're doing.
What about somebody who's just starting out with something? Say they're just starting out with music, just starting out with art or writing or whatever it is.
Like when I started playing music, nobody had to tell me to practice because I just was addicted to practice because I loved it. I guess one thing I would say is make sure whatever you're doing is something you actually care about and want to do.
I get this question a lot of like, how do you determine that?
I don't think you need to determine that.
Yeah. How do you know you love it?
If you know you love something, there's no way you're not going to pursue it.
Right.
Like when I was into, cycling, I got up at 6 every day and rode, 60, 70 miles a day. And nobody was like, hey, you need to do this. I just wanted to do it.
What got you into it?
I don't even know.
It just kind of pops in your head.
Yeah.
Watching Tour de France and you're like, hey, I can do that.
I definitely could not do that. No, I don't know what it was. But it's like everything else that I care about in my life. Like I'm exposed to something, and then I get addicted to that thing.
Yeah, I do a similar thing. It's not easy, but I see that you're doing it too. This is kind of a meta thing, but you're not hesitating when you're thinking about doing these things.
Right.
I mean, like maybe the ideas you've had for a little while, but you do it. You take that step. What would you say to people who are like hesitant and like downright scared to do something that they think they would love, but they don't want to be bad at it?
Who cares? Like, you have one very vapor-esque life on the earth. You're here for a very short time. It's like a blink. What are you waiting on? You know?
Yeah.
If you're here for like just hardly at all on the earth, you need to go and do things. And not doing them, what are you going to remember in 10 years?
Right.
I mean, this drumming project I'm doing, it might be just, who knows what will happen with it. But in 10 years, I know that I'm going to accomplish like a pretty substantial body of work.
Yeah. At the very least, you have this project that you did that changed you.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
What about, have you gone through any like setbacks, creative setbacks?
Yeah.
How'd you handle those?
The way I handle any setbacks with the drumming project is just changing BPMs, the beats per minute. Yeah. So if I have an idea and I set it at 120 beats per minute and nothing's working, I will go to 90 beats per minute and I will rethink the entire thing, and that resets it, and that's it.
That's interesting. I like that.
It's super simple. Like, just your brain interprets tempos very, very intuitively. And so that's my reset.
That's good.
I have had times where I'm like just against a wall. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, like I said, I've got a wife and four kids.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to be doing this for 4 hours like it was when I started. I want to like knock it out as fast as I can and still have something that's, you know, I'm proud of. So there have been times when I'm like, oh, I can't believe this is not working, you know, and I get frustrated, but just resetting BPMs is my go-to.
When I'm trying to come up with songs, I change locations. That usually helps.
Yeah, I can't do that because
I know drums.
Yeah, right. I've got drums. I got my whole recording set up.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating too because I lived in my house in St. Elmo for like 16 years and I built this attic studio, which was like really, really beautiful and I loved it. And now I'm like this dungeon, the dungeon of the mansion. It's got like low ceilings. It's ugly. But that's what I've got to work with. And it sounds surprisingly good for being a basement with low ceilings. But yeah, I can't really think, oh, I'm just going to go set up somewhere else.
Along with the brevity of life that you mentioned earlier, I think people get stuck on age a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm too young, I'm too old. But if you're too young to do something and you're too old to do something, where are you perfect to do that thing?
You're never.
Yeah.
You're never.
There's never a perfect time.
Yeah. You just need to do. Yeah. I mean, I feel fortunate in my case because I feel like at this point in my life, I'm 41 years old and I've got a good amount of, like, I feel like I've lived my life pretty well to where I have a lot of experiences to draw on. I've hitchhiked all over the world. I've ridden my motorcycle to Mexico. Done all kinds of crazy, weird adventures because I just love adventure. And so I have like this breadth of experience that I can kind of infuse into anything that I create. If I would have ventured onto what I'm doing right now when I was in my 20s, I think it would have been far worse. And that's just my personal experience. I marvel at people that are in their 20s, their early 20s when I got married, and they're able to do good things. Because I think that I was a pretty crappy artist in my 20s.
So along with that, what advice would you give to yourself when you were younger?
Probably today? Get into the woodshed a little
woodshed.
More.
Woodshed? Yeah.
Okay. Like get into the practice room, like refine everything that you want to do. Experience as much breadth of music as you can. Without trying to just get out there as fast as you can. That's probably what I would say to myself. And that's, again, just
that's
me.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like I said, I'm very self-critical. I look at what stuff that I created like 10 years ago and I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know if you've experienced this. I experienced this recently. So I know Illustrator pretty well. It's a design thing. Yeah, I'm sure you know what it is. But if people don't, when people who have no idea what design looks like and what it is, you don't realize that thing that you know is something that's valuable because you know you've done it so much that it's just ingrained. It's like of course Illustrator.
Yep,
duh, I can throw up a logo. Okay, easy enough. But that's something that people who don't do that
marvel.
Yeah, it's the same with music. Same with drums.
It is.
Like you,
it's easy to get complacent with where you are.
Yeah. And it ties into that thing where like you see an expert doing something and you're like, oh, I can do that, you know? Yeah. Or if you, I don't watch too many sports, but if you're watching like football or something and you're like, what are you doing? I could do that so much better. You know,
I have an ongoing joke with my wife about that where we're watching anything and I'm like, I could definitely do that. It could be like figure skating. And I've like ice skated twice in my life. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could nail that move right there. And she's like, are you crazy?
So let's, if you don't mind, let's go into relationship stuff. So I have a segment with my girlfriend on here where we do Renaissance dating and just talk about, we're certainly not experts and we don't mean to, point ourselves as experts, but we just hash out things and have conversations around dating and advice around that. So what has been your experience with pursuing someone and being married and that dynamic? Do you have any advice you'd give to someone who perhaps is looking for a significant other or who has one who feels that they want to do better in that regard? It's a tough question.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think the ultimate thing is just dying to yourself.
Explain that a bit.
Just foregoing, and I'm not good at this, by the way. I'm just telling you that I know this is the case. I'm not telling you that I'm doing this because I definitely need to do more of this.
That's my entire life. Yeah,
I'm an extremely strong-willed person, and I'm sure that I am extremely difficult to deal with on a daily basis. I know that to be true. But I would do better to die to myself on a daily basis and put my desires and hopes and dreams on a lower tier than my spouse.
Okay. In a not a negative sense, but a positive sense, the word compromise to that, you have to compromise to each other's values and feelings. And it's a relationship, obviously, right? Mm. So it has to work both ways, right?
It does. And it's in our particular relationship, it's really apparent because we're polar opposites. Like, I'm an extreme extrovert. My wife is an extreme introvert.
Okay.
We have totally different interests and hobbies. So compromise is key for sure.
What do you love about being a parent?
Oh, most everything. I've got all four of my kids at the school that I teach at. And so this is just a new thing. So we're all traveling to school and back, and I get to walk around campus and check in on them, and they're just awesome. I mean, I guess my biggest fear is just that I'm going to screw up and
I think that's every parent's fear.
It is, but it's real, man. Yeah. It's real. And I could not ask for more awesome kids. Like, these kids that we have are just super amazing. Like, every one of them has like a heart of gold.
Wow.
It's not like that they don't struggle and don't have like an occasional attitude problem or something, but man, I am blessed beyond measure with these kids. They're just super beautiful.
Do you have any advice you'd give to someone who's thinking about having kids? Or maybe they just had kids and they're scrambling?
Okay, if you just had a kid, I can tell you one very tangible piece of advice. You have a baby. When you get that baby up at night to nurse, you need to learn how to wrap it like a super tight burrito. This is super
work
tangible. I'm telling you, like, this
get
is black and white. Like, you had a kid, you've got a baby. When you swaddle that kid back into its blanket, you wrap the blanket up over its feet, and then you tuck super tight the blanket over and then the other blanket over that, and you wrap it where it can't move, and you stick a pacifier in the mouth, and you will sleep. That's super tangible, and it's real, man.
You've saved many lives out there.
I'm telling you right now, I've told some new parents that, and I've seen them come back to life.
that's so good. What advice would you give to people like who haven't had kids, but they're thinking about it, but they're kind of on the rocks, but why have kids is my question that I'm trying to jumble out.
I guess that's different for everybody. Yeah. Like, I can't answer that for everyone. I will say, kind of in relation to your question, you're never going to be ready to have kids. Mm. You're never going to get to a point where like, wow, today I've got it all together. Time to reproduce. It's not going to happen. You're always going to have problems. You're always going to be inept. If you're going to have kids, you do the best that you can.
I think that's just the way it is with everything and
just
how it is.
It's like getting married. You know? Same thing. Like, you're never going to be like, well, I'm ready for this, because you're not. You're never going to be. Mm.
So who's influenced you and why?
In terms of what?
In terms of life and in terms of music, I'd say.
Okay. In terms of life. My parents have definitely influenced me.
Have you had any mentors?
Not a lot.
Okay.
I probably could use some mentors at this point.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did have a mentor for a small period of time in high school. I think his name was Mike Falkenberry. He's the guy that introduced me to the Blue Hole in Soddy Daisy, mm-hmm. North Chickamauga Creek.
It's great.
Yeah, it's my favorite place. And then he just disappeared into the wind. He just was like gone. He was like, I'm going to be your mentor. And then he was gone. That's probably what's wrong with me. But other than him, yeah, not a lot of people. Musically, I can point to all kinds of people. I talked about Billy Martin a little bit ago. Talked about Neil Peart. Tim Herb Alexander of Primus was a big influence in high school. Elvin Jones, Max Roach. I can go. JoJo Mayer was a big one.
JoJo Mayer.
JoJo Mayer is probably in my top three favorite drummers. He's the one who...
He's a drummer of...
He's in a band called Nerve.
Nerve.
But he's kind of his own entity. He does clinics all over the world. Super, super technical. He's sort of a Buddy Rich for this age.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's the guy that got me interested in drum and bass music. Drum and bass is like extremely fast, technical, electronic music. And when I saw him playing these drum and bass beats, it sort of changed me. And that's when I went into the woodshed that I was talking about earlier. I was living in Atlanta at the time and just went into a basement and just spent months learning drum and bass beats.
That's one of the things that I'd love to learn. I dabble in drums, mm-hmm. but the beats types of drumming, I'd really love to learn. What kind of equipment do you use? How does someone get into that?
With drum and bass, what I do is I use small drums.
Okay.
Tiny drums. I have a 16-inch kick drum, a 10-inch tom. I have a marching drum that I converted into a floor tom.
Interesting.
And a 10-inch snare, and so super high-pitched, because the way drum and bass started was in the UK, turntable musicians would take old funk records, and they would speed them up.
Ah, I see.
So they'd take... That kind of beat, and then... super fast. And so learning to replicate those beats on a drum set was very formative for me. And this was like in the early 2000s, when drum and bass was kind of like... exploding all over the country. My thing was always replicating what people did on drum machines in real time on a drum set.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
And so that's good. That's kind of what Infradig was to my, that band. We were very into just trying to get the feel of electronic music, but infuse a human element onto it.
Mm. Question along with that, do you say you bring that over to Summer Dregs? Like everything is like physical based, right?
Oh, it's very physical.
Yeah.
It's Summer Dregs is sort of like if you took Infradig, which was an avant-garde electronic band, and you infused some very palatable pop music onto it. It's definitely more accessible and more palatable to a larger population.
Okay. I want to hit a couple of bigger categories and then get in some quick round questions.
Okay.
If that sounds good to you.
Yeah, sure.
One is health and wellness. What's your relationship around health?
Actually, I have a terrible disease called ankylosing spondylitis.
Bless you.
Thank you. And
what is that? I'm not aware.
It's an arthritic condition where in the worst cases you can't stand up straight and your back turns into like a bamboo stalk.
Oh man.
And you're just jacked. And so in the mid 2000s, I could not get up and walk around the room, put my pants on, that kind of thing. And my wife is very good at like Google momming and getting on Google and finding solutions to health problems particularly. And she looked up all kinds of things in mm-hmm. relation to this, because we weren't sure what it was for a long time.
Right.
I was just like, oh, great. I can't do anything anymore.
I feel like that's the worst part about it. You don't know.
It was
right?
like 2 years of not knowing and being in excruciating just horrific pain. And finally, we came to something as simple as the Paleolithic diet.
Ah, paleo, and, yes.
And that was a godsend for me. Pretty much as soon as I started into a paleo-style diet, all of my health problems went away.
That's fantastic.
And I'm talking, I could not do anything. And I'm a very physical person. I have a ton of physical hobbies and interests, and I could not do anything. And
that's frustrating.
With the advent of like figuring, and this was before like the paleo movement.
Yeah.
And before CrossFit and all the stuff that goes along with that. Kudos to my wife. She figured it out. And yeah, it was a huge, huge godsend for me. And so I try to stick to that as strictly as I can. And depending on the season, I'm stricter than others.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to live, right?
But I'm very, conscious of my health, and, I try to be as healthy as I possibly can, especially with diet and nutrition.
It's not always the case, but I think a lot of the times that unfortunately an illness or a health problem usually leads you down a road to pursuing health.
I'm thankful for it, man. You know? I'm so super thankful for it. Like this past week, I had like a small flare-up in my hip, which is a result of this thing. And that happens so infrequently. It's just this huge reminder, like, do you remember how this felt?
Yeah.
And do you remember how good you feel on a daily basis? And it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool reminder.
Related to the thing that you don't last forever, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went through something similar a few years ago. I sprained my neck, which doesn't sound like crazy, but I sprained my neck in the front really bad. So I was like out for a year, and it still kind of accumulated like an ache. So I'm well aware of injury and how it impacts everything.
Yeah.
Right. You don't realize how much you need your back or your neck until you can't use it.
When your back is messed up,
yeah,
it changes everything about your existence.
Yeah.
That is the worst injury you can have, is you throw out your back.
Yeah.
Cause I've actually just like a year ago, I threw out my back. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go to work. I was just messed up.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
Just that little thing that you don't think about on a daily basis. You need to be thankful for every ligament you have, every little joint you have that works right. Cause when it doesn't, you know it.
So with paleo, you follow, the general like paleo style, like, grass fed meats, veggies, no dairy.
Dairy I can do.
Okay, you can do dairy.
Yeah, I'm more like, if you've heard of Mark Sisson, the Primal Blueprint, that style. It's a little more lenient. You can have dairy. The main thing is just keeping sugar to a very minimum and no grains.
No grains.
And lucky for me, I always hated bread.
Really?
Yeah.
So. I'm the opposite. I love bread.
I never liked bread, so it was like a real providential thing. I was like, oh, perfect.
I would just eat the bread.
Really?
Know? Like, yeah.
Ugh.
Like pizza. If we're talking like pizza.
Eating like a dry sock. <It's gross. laughs> No, pizza, I understand.
Like the crust is where it's at, you know? I could just shove all that other stuff off.
No, that's the good stuff, man.
But I'm in a weird situation right now where, okay, so I did paleo for a couple of years. I didn't start with paleo, but I did paleo for a couple of years. And after that, I kind of went even more extreme and did like bulletproof stuff.
David Asprey?
Yeah, David Asprey.
That charlatan.
Why do you say that?
Oh, that's a long story. He's been outed.
Yeah.
But he's got some good ideas.
Yeah.
Bit of a scoundrel.
Yeah. And somewhere down the line, I ran into some gut problems. So that's what I'm dealing with now. I'm like allergic to a lot of the main things. So I would put myself in the category of a meat vegan, which is... It's tough, but...
Ooh, you're going to get some hate for that.
Probably.
A meat vegan?
I can have, there's only so much that I can have, right? So I got to have some grass-fed meat and then some, lots of vegan stuff. But yeah, so I'm familiar with this whole avenue.
Yeah, it's you can get deep into it.
Yeah.
And for a while, that was like, I guess like maybe like 7 or 8 years ago, I it was like my passion. I was reading everything about nutrition, and I was obnoxious because once you start to feel good, you want other people to feel good, and then you become like an evangelist jerk. And,
I know. You assault people.
Nobody wants to talk to you anymore because you're like, oh, this again. Dude, I got to talk to you about this paleo stuff. And everybody's like, shut up.
And you're like at a hot dog place or something.
Yeah, you're at Taco Bell.
So do you exercise frequently?
Yeah.
Drumming is a physical thing too.
It is, but like once you've done it for a while, it's like less physical because you don't have to exert your energy nearly as like a beginner would. You're more efficient with your motion. So I don't ever think of drumming as like some kind of exercise at this point.
So one last big category is religion.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hit on to it. What are your thoughts on belief and faith?
Well, I am a Christian.
Okay.
And I have been most of my life.
What would you describe as being a Christian to you?
Just following the teachings of Jesus.
Okay.
And that's the biggest part of it for me. And I guess I came to like a crisis a few years back where I was just like not sure about what I believed, and everything came back to the resurrection,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that Christianity would never have gotten off the ground if there wasn't a legitimate resurrection story.
Right.
And that's what solidified everything that I had sort of believed my whole life.
So you're thinking like, why would anyone rally around this person if it didn't happen?
Why would anybody rally around it, and why would, if you were writing a story that was fictitious, why would you have women in that day and age?
Very interesting.
Be the ones to tell the story.
You right. know,
that's pretty ridiculous. If you're trying to sell something to that culture in that time, that's not the route that you take.
That's a great point, I think. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some devil's advocate stuff, but...
Well, there's plenty of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with you. But what would you say to someone who is like in the opposite direction?
I would bring up the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's just like you can't really argue against it. I mean, you can, but it's why would any of this be off the ground if that did not happen? It wasn't a mass hallucination. I mean, I just feel like if you look at what the resurrection is, it's hard to argue with it.
I'm kind of the mind of the world and the universe is so complex, yet so simple at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's intricate and everything is connected and everything is like moving, and it's this so I can't even wrap my head around how vast and like detailed it is, and that's kind of where I come to with belief. Like I think
that's
why someone created this, you know.
Yeah, and the fact that there is something as opposed to nothing. I mean, even if you're not going to go into the theology of a religion, I don't understand a complete agnostic sort of perspective. Because there is something,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to nothing.
Let's do some rapid fire. So what songs do you sing to yourself when you're alone or in the shower or something? You don't sing?
No.
No? Okay.
It's just too painful.
Okay. So what are your favorite, bands over the years, and what are you listening to now? I love finding new music. So hit me.
I've been listening over my life. Like I said, Modesky Martin Wood is a big one.
Rush.
I don't really listen to Rush anymore, but I mean, if it comes on, I have like a good dopamine just shot, you know? I love classic rock. I love emotive music. I like Sigur Rós. I've in recent years I've been doing like these breathing exercises. I've been doing
really
the Wim Hof method.
Are you doing that? I'd love to do that. Yeah, yeah.
I've been doing that for like 3 years now.
How's your experience been with that?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel
like a surge of creativity. Feel like an optimism which is unparalleled.
Did you go through his program online or did you?
I've gone through 6 weeks of it.
Okay.
6 weeks of the 10-week program, but I feel like I got the gist of it. Yeah. So I do it on my own terms kind of thing.
Yeah.
But while I'm doing that, I listen to a lot of Hayden Kalman.
Okay.
Do you know him?
Yeah.
It's just like this like sappy emotional music. But while you're breathing and you're like in this breath retention, you just feel like you're on another planet.
Oh wow!
And so that's one guy I've been listening to while I do that stuff.
Sidebar: I would love to try that. I meditate in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, 10-15 minutes.
You should definitely try this because it will take your meditation to another level.
Okay. Oh man, that's good.
Yeah.
So what bands are you listening to now?
I've been listening to Sampha.
Sampha is great.
Yeah.
His piano song.
Yeah.
That just gets me, man. That song just gets me.
It's really good. Yeah. I've been listening to that. I've been listening to Kai Kai.
I haven't heard of Kai Kai.
K-Y-E-K-Y-E.
Okay.
And then Pandora, I put on the Cinematic Orchestra and whatever flows through that channel. I've been listening to that.
Nice. That's good. Good influence.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of, Mute Math? Or
I love Mute Math.
Yeah.
Actually,
I love their drummer. So I was just curious.
Yeah, Darren King.
Yeah.
So, The 1 year that my band Infradig played Bonnaroo, we played the same stage as them.
Oh, nice.
And then like 2 weeks later, they played that same weirdo Christian music festival that we played. We played the same stage there too.
That's great. Did you get to meet him by
chance? I think I did meet him like just on a passing dirt road at Bonnaroo.
Nice.
But I don't think we like talked for very long.
Bonnaroo is nuts.
I love it.
It's so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot, covered in, you're like tarred and feather and dust. I love it though. Yeah, I hope to get back there at some point.
Do you like to read?
I do, but I don't read as much as I should.
Any books that stand out to you? Today, in the past?
Dharma Bums.
I've heard of it. I haven't read
it. Jack Kerouac?
Yeah.
All Jack Kerouac's books fueled my adventures.
Yeah. I hear On the Road.
The Road, yeah. On the Road is one of the best. I remember I read that when I was touring in Montgomery, Alabama, and then a few months later I was hitchhiking all over Europe because of that book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's some serious inspiration.
Yeah.
I've read Vagabonding.
Yes, not as good.
Not as good?
It's good, but...
Yeah, similar vein.
On the Road is the quintessential. Like, it'll make you want to just, like, walk out to the street and put your thumb up.
Man, okay, I'm checking that one out. I know he's written a lot of four or five books, like Big Sur or something.
Oh, Big
like
Sur,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's a good one. Any other?
Oh, man, I'm having a blank. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. You mentioned podcasts earlier.
Yes.
Are you big into podcasts?
I am very into podcasts.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's podcast has been very, very influential over my life for the past few years. And it's unfortunate that whenever anyone hears his name, they think of like Fear Factor, which is dumb. But his podcast, if you get the right one with like Graham Hancock or if you get the right guest on there, it can be like a game changer about how you view the universe. And aside from that, Comedy Bang Bang.
Comedy Bang Bang is hilarious. Yeah.
I actually had one of my, I made one of their plugs themes that got on there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It was pretty rewarding.
Moment. Yeah.
I love that because I am a goofball. And I love that style of humor.
Are you into movies at all? Documentaries?
Not so much.
Okay.
I mean, I like movies, but
yeah.
I think I watched a lot of documentaries and then I got really burnt out on just the style of watching a documentary.
It's
so.
I'm not into that craft of making them, but they seem very samey in terms of like uplifting, downturn, like 1, 2, 3.
Exactly. You know, they all have a similar template.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah. If I grabbed your one of your best friends, in one word, what do you think they would describe you in?
Passionate.
Passionate.
That's what I'd hope they say.
Yeah.
I mean, they might just say like idiotic. I don't know. Depends on the friend.
Got true.
Wide,
very true.
Wide group of friends.
So passionate. Why would you think that? Just from by example.
Yeah, I think. I mean, whenever I get something in my head to do, I kind of am whole hog into it and just go for it.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, I just go.
That's good. If someone gave you like $5-10 million, what would you do with it?
I'd pay off my debts. And then
after that,
I would probably convert a school bus into an RV kind of thing and just travel the entire world with my family and homeschool along the way.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. That's really good. Would you still do the stuff that you've been doing now?
Yeah, not every day though. Like when my birthday,
you have flexibility, right?
When my birthday rolls around November 24th and it's like the 365th of these drum beats, it's going to be a roaring celebration. Like I said earlier, like I've got so many other interests. I just felt like kind of called almost to do this thing,
yeah,
in the way that I'm doing it. But when I'm done with it, it will be a nice bit of closure to be able to pursue other things that I'm passionate about.
Yeah, and you can say like, I've done this, right?
Yeah,
I've completed
exactly.
This. Yeah,
and I'll have the peace of mind knowing that I fulfilled a substantial goal.
Yeah,
and it's not to say I'm not gonna do anymore. Like I kind of want to build this as a business,
mm-hmm,
in the future and make it into something that's financially lucrative. And so maybe, you know, a couple of months.
Yeah. You could get to the point where you are, the samples that you're creating, you can sell those.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
That'd be one.
That's
idea.
My plan.
Yeah.
But it'll be nice not to have like a daily deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. On that, I forgot to mention, like, what about like sick days or were you,
oh, I've had them.
Yeah. What yeah. did you do on those days?
I just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. Okay. I just go down there and like, about to die. And I'm like, oh, that was a bad take. Let's do it again. Okay. Actually, one of the things that I feel like I should give a TED talk on is this one technique that I have, which is yelling out, nope. Here's what I do. I'll have an idea. I'll have the BPMs. I have mics set up, everything. And I'll start into it. And immediately I'll know if it was a good one or not. And if it's not, I yell out, nope. And you can read that waveform.
Uh-huh.
And so when I'm editing all of these drum beats and like in any sample pack, it's anywhere from like 40 to 80 drum beats. And so I'll see this little waveform that looks like a little oval. And I know that that's when I yelled no. And I can just eradicate that from the group. And it
that's
saves
very
me
effective.
Lots of yeah. time.
It's very good time management, I'd say.
Yeah.
If you could master any skill instantly, or 1 to 3 skills, what would they be?
It would definitely be jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Have you tried it? That's something I'd love to try. I know there's one around here.
There's a few.
Yeah.
There's Chattanooga Jiu-Jitsu. There's Krav Maga, or Chat Krav, rather.
Yeah.
I used to train with some of those guys before they were Chat Krav. But becoming a black belt in jiu-jitsu on average takes like 10 years. It's not like when you learn the dance moves of Taekwondo and can progress through belts super easily. So if I could like immediately have any skill, that would definitely be it.
That's good. I would put that in one of my top
yeah.
10, I would say.
It's pretty substantial.
Yeah. I think that ability of movement, mm-hmm, as I move my body around, that ability of movement could affect like all different areas of your life.
Yes.
You know?
In secondary, I would say, yeah, gymnastic mastery.
Gymnastics, yes.
Since you mentioned movement. Movement's one of my passions as well. And I have like a legitimate interest in gymnastics as well. But having a mastery in it, I would very much welcome.
That's good. What's going on with Summer Dregs right now?
Summer Dregs is in a strange place. So I mentioned earlier it started as a recording project, and then it became a band. And Stephen Nichols was the singer, and then Stephen was too busy, and we sort of regrouped. Took on young Paul Smallman to be our singer and built this whole light show thing.
Yeah. Which is insane, by the way.
Yeah, it is insane. What's insane is moving it around.
Oh, yeah.
It's horrific. but right now, Paul sort of moved on. He's doing choir directing and church music full time. Yeah. And so Carl and I are doing just the two of us installment of Summer Dregs at this point. It's sort of like a DJ set, and it's very fun and very portable compared to the light show.
Right.
So the light show is kind of retired until further notice.
Gotcha. On the light show, how on earth do you, how does someone get into that? Like, I think
it's surprisingly easy.
Really?
Yeah. You buy some LED lights, LED strips, and you program the lights through Ableton Live.
Okay.
And
I haven't gotten to that point in Ableton yet.
Well, you know, I didn't program the lights either. Yeah. I programmed some things for my purposes with the drums and stuff that light up. But Paul actually did most of the programming for the lights.
I ask because the music is obviously hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
But the performance is, I think, is equally, if not more important. You know,
right.
The performance and the lighting that goes along with that, the recording.
Yeah.
Right. So, that it's insane, but that's awesome. So you and Carl are tag teaming it.
Yeah. And we're probably going to be doing a couple of shows in the next 1 or 2 months.
Awesome.
Just the two of
us.
Definitely
let me know about those.
Yeah. And
yeah,
this is something like as soon as our band Infradig ended, I was like, hey, Carl, you and I, we just understand each other on a very, very deep level musically. He knows what to get out of me, and I can read him, and we have like a very symbiotic relationship.
It's a great dynamic.
Yeah, and you can't just build that overnight. We have like 16, 17 years of playing together, so we kind of like understand what to get out of each other. And so finally we're doing that. And so I hope that we do more of it. Well, it remains to be seen like what the scale will be, but yeah, there's nobody I'd rather be playing with.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have any plugs you want to do? I think you have some stuff on Spotify and some other places.
The main thing for me is just Permanent Record
Permanent
Drums.
Records?
Yeah,
okay.
PermanentRecordDrums.com. And I've got an Instagram account where I have all these silly videos.
And I'll post everything in the show notes. Yeah.
And other than that, you can check out Summer Dregs. You can go through the archives of my life, Infradig, the distribution, Summer Dregs. Pretty happy with those bands.
Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Renaissance Life Show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have talking to Josh Green. If you want to support the Renaissance, please go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review to help to distribute the show to new groups of people who might not have heard about it. And in fact, if you know somebody who's really interested in learning and really interested in music, for example, in this episode, music or your health and wellness or something that we talked about today, tell a friend. That goes a long way. So go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, tell a friend. And if you want to support the Renaissance even more, go to patreon.com/lifemastery. Like I said up at the top, I won't say too much about it, but basically if you want to support us and what we do, you can go there and become a patron for as little as $5, $10, $15 a month, and you get exclusive access to Life Mastery. And of course, the first 20 that sign up upon hearing this episode will get 2 free hours of Life Mastery coaching from me. So go to patreon.com/lifemastery. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. Until next time, keep pursuing. This is Joshua Wagner signing out.
Secret Table Beat of the Week. Yes. That's great. Nicely done.
Okay, good.